Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. I'm so excited that you've decided to join me for today's episode of the podcast. I am so excited to be joined by Diane Bruni on this week's episode. But before we dive into the interview, we've got two sponsors for today's show. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Yoga Boss Babe. Yoga Boss Babe is a monthly lifestyle subscription box for passionate and motivated yoga instructors who want to build and grow their yoga business. Every month, you get a box of goodies delivered to your doorstep filled with things that will help you build and grow your yoga business. For example, in this last month's box, I got a box that was themed around private yoga. So in it, it had a candle, incense, essential oil, a little mini speaker that's Bluetooth that will pair with your phone, as well as a book and a workshop that will help support the private yoga business. So every month you have access to some sort of online workshop, group coaching, and the private Facebook community. It's amazing to have like-minded people who are interested in the business side of yoga to really help grow, expand, and inspire your yoga business. So if you're looking to take your business to the next level, this box might be for you. Head on over to yogabossbabe.com and use code MBOM to get a discount off your first box. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by Fave Yogis. Here's a business tool that's really going to change the lives of yoga teachers. The Fave Yogis app puts control and freedom in your hands. You can update your class schedule, offer your own classes anywhere, anytime, and get paid all from your phone. No more updating your schedule in multiple places and paying a ton of money each month for a software platform where students might stumble across your classes. Students simply open Fave Yogis and your schedule will be there. On top of being able to send students notifications about class updates, set prices and ticket availability, and auto send reminders to your students, you can also post workshops and events that will allow you to reach organic traffic through the search feature that you may never have been able to reach through simply putting the events on your website. There's a brand spanking new feature of the Fave Yogis app that I'm super excited about. If you're teaching a lot of classes, you can now auto-generate text for sharing your schedule on social media. Along with the time and date, you can optionally include the title and location of each class or event. Head on over to your app store and download Fave Yogis for free. It's F-A-V-Y-O-G-I-S. Use code MBOM and let them know that I sent you. As always, I really appreciate your support for the sponsors of the podcast. They're super awesome businesses that I personally use and can attest to, and it just really, really helps for me to continue the production of the podcast to have the sponsors of the show. So now on to today's episode with Diane Bruni. For those of you who do not know Diane, Diane is the first Ashtanga teacher in Canada. She ran a yoga studio for a number of years. She's worked in the industry for ages and ages and has done so much amazing stuff. She's taught yoga teachers. She's taught around the world. She's run workshops all over the place. And now she's moved her business or her teaching more towards movement-based. And if this is sounding familiar, I did interview her daughter, Catherine Bruni Young, a couple of weeks back. And she has actually had a similar path with her yoga teaching. So it's really fun to hear from both of them, to hear both of their stories, and to really hear about the yoga industry, you know, 20 or so years ago. So without further ado, here is Diane.
I am very excited to be joined on the podcast today by Diane Bruni. Welcome to the podcast today, Diane.
Thanks for the invitation. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be chatting with you. I mean, you have such an incredible history and background in yoga, and you have been teaching yoga for so long. You were the first teacher to teach Ashtanga in Canada, which is absolutely incredible. You have a studio. You've done so much. So really excited to dive in with that. But I'm curious if we can, you know, back up a ton of years and talk about how you first got into yoga.
Okay. I was 19 years old, and I met a woman at a store where I was working at. She came in as a customer. We started chatting. She was wearing a turban and all white clothes, and I thought she looked pretty bizarre. So I asked her about what she was wearing and why she was wearing the turban. And she told me that she was a yogi and she lived in an ashram in downtown Toronto. She told me a little bit about her lifestyle and I was very intrigued. Many months later, I ran into the same woman on the street and she handed me a flyer to go to a workshop. And she said her teacher was coming to teach in Toronto. His name was Yogi Bhajan. He was the man who brought Kundalini Yoga to the West. I didn't know any of this, of course. He basically handed me this flyer and said, you should come. And I looked into her eyes and she looked into my eyes and I said, okay, I will. And I canceled my plans for that night. I was going to be out partying with my friends. Instead, I went to this very bizarre experience at a, it was held in a big church in downtown Toronto, the Holy Trinity Church. And there were probably about 200 people there, all sitting on sheepskin rugs, everyone wearing white and turbans. And a few people like me, like random people who just showed up, who didn't really belong there, fit in. They encouraged me to go and sit with them in the line. And then Yogi Bhajan came out and he led a white tantric yoga session. It was a Friday night and then all day Saturday, all day Sunday. I ended up going back for the whole weekend. And it kind of blew my world apart. And I could feel the changes inside of me, and I continued to practice with them. I continued to go to their ashram, which was a big house on Palmerston Avenue. And I went there, started going there almost every single day after that one weekend with Yogi Bhajan. So that's how I got into yoga. And through that, I met someone who was into body work, and I ended up studying body work, shiatsu, and started working as a body worker. And I was working as a body worker for about, 10 or 12 years. And then I discovered Iyengar yoga, and then from Iyengar yoga, I discovered Ashtanga yoga.
Wow, that's an incredible story. Yeah. What do you think it was about that woman that kind of drew you in and made you feel like, I want to try this thing that I've never heard of before?
Yeah, it was very bizarre. It was definitely had something to do with the energy in her eyes. And yeah, I could tell that there was something very different about her. And just the way she looked at me, just the way she connected with me was very, very foreign to me, and it struck a chord inside of me, and I wanted to go and check it out. And then when I ended up in this very bizarre situation, I thought it was so weird, but I started noticing like a lot of changes in myself almost immediately, almost like right after the first class. I felt such elation, and I felt so kind of high. And it was all very natural, and it was very appealing to me.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. What an amazing story and amazing way to start. And at such a young age as well. That's very, very
cool.
Yeah, it
was crazy. What first yoga class, white tantric with Yogi Bhajan, like with hundreds of people. It's like, oh my God, had I shown up to like the class in the church basement with, you know, ladies on their carpets, I might not have been so blown away, but I was pretty blown away and realized that this is really powerful stuff that I was going to spend a lot of time checking out.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you did the body work for a couple of years. And at what point did you start, you know, teaching yoga?
Well, I continue to, this is the thing, I've gone back to doing a little body work, but I didn't start teaching yoga full time until 1997. And I graduated from body work from Shiatsu school in 1982. So I worked 15 years full time as a body worker. And I did not start teaching yoga until, well, I started teaching, I guess, in 95. I was teaching a few classes a week at another woman's studio. And then in 97, Ron and I opened the Downward Dog Yoga Studio.
That's incredible. And I mean, I feel like it must have been like a very different landscape in 1997. Like, what was it like opening a studio at that point?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing and the most really hard thing for, I think, for young people to comprehend is there was no internet. Imagine that. There was no internet.
Yeah.
We didn't have computers. So when I learned about, and my teacher, my Iyengar teacher, so I went from Kundalini to Iyengar. My Iyengar teacher, who lived in Pune with Iyengar for many years before she moved to Toronto, and then I found her, and she was teaching in her living room with very, very small numbers of people. Like, I'm talking 3, 4, 5 people. And I studied with her for 8 years. And I never thought of going to anybody else. Like, there was no reason. I was, you know, learning so much from her every day. So this allegiance to like one teacher, I think, is pretty rare nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I discovered Ashtanga, it was through a magazine, through the Yoga Journal. I read an article in the Yoga Journal. And in that article, they talked about this thing called Ashtanga Yoga. There were two ads in the article, one for a book called Power Yoga by Beryl Bender Birch, and another one was for a video by Richard Freeman called Ashtanga Yoga, the Primary Series. I ordered both immediately. I just intuitively knew that I needed to check this out. So the book and the video arrived at my door, and I watched the video relentlessly, like a lot, every day, sometimes more than once a day. And I was completely blown away by this video. And then eventually I started trying to practice with the video. Eventually I phoned Richard Freeman. There was a phone number on the box of the video. So that's radical, right? There was no website. There's no email. I actually had to phone a phone number, and he actually picked up the phone.
That's amazing.
Okay, he actually answered, and we had a little conversation on the phone. That was our first time we talked. And he told me that he was coming to Niagara Falls to teach a workshop in Niagara Falls, which is about 90 minutes from Toronto. And he thought I was calling because of that. So he saw the area code. And he picked up the phone thinking I was somehow connected to that event. I had never heard of the event or the person organizing the event. But I ended up going because it was coming up in like a couple of weeks after that phone call. So I went and met him in person and took my first Ashtanga class with him. The event was quite large. There were like 100 people there. They were all older yoga teachers, and they were all part of an organization called FOIT, Federation of Yoga Teachers, something or other. And they were all teaching Hatha Yoga. So this woman organized this workshop for Richard Freeman to come and teach Ashtanga. I was like quite, you know, curious about how he was going to pull this off. And it was an amazing experience because I realized that Ashtanga could be anything. And what Richard taught that weekend was absolutely perfect for the people who were there. He just did a few poses, super slow motion, very, very methodical, more like an Iyengar class than an Ashtanga class. And it completely excited me. It's like I realized, oh, this is really cool. Even though it's such an intense practice, it can be modified to meet the needs of the people learning it. So that was my introduction to Ashtanga. My introduction to Ashtanga was not the hardcore extreme approach to Ashtanga. And when I started teaching Ashtanga, I did so because my friend opened a studio And she had heard that I was, you know, getting into this other new yoga, even though I had been practicing yoga for probably 15 years, very, very consistently. But Ashtanga was very new to me. So she wanted me to teach whatever I wanted. And I was super excited about, you know, teaching this new thing that I was just learning. So I started teaching Ashtanga. And we didn't even call it that because nobody knew what it was. I don't even remember what she posted it as on her schedule. But eventually we started calling it what it was. And shortly after, the whole yoga boom happened, like pretty much it felt like overnight, actually.
Wow.
It just happened. It happened really, really fast. And if you weren't living it, I think, I don't know what people recall or remember, but I was in the living it. I was in the middle of it. And I remember it went from completely obscure, like I said, like, you know, four or five people in my yoga teacher's living room, to me teaching at this new studio where I had to beg people to come to my class, begging my friends, making phone calls the night before so that I wouldn't be teaching to bare walls. And I would say within a year, all of a sudden, yoga was becoming hugely popular. And there were a few big articles that happened and a few big, well, I guess I think that Sting and Madonna promoting Ashtanga yoga really, really helped to speed up the spread of yoga. In particular, I think yoga became popular because it basically became like a workout for people. So a lot of people who were normally getting their workout at the gym heard about this challenging style of yoga and started going to yoga instead of the gym. And it kind of took off when, you know, Sting and Madonna are looking like amazing on stage. And when people would ask them, what are you doing? Like, how are you working out? They start promoting Ashtanga yoga. So things really took off.
Wow. That's so interesting and so incredible. I feel like that's like such a different world than like me coming into yoga. So it's really, really cool to hear that.
Yeah, it's really bizarre, right? And when it was happening, we were like, we weren't sure what was happening, you know? It was like, it all happened so fast. We were just like living in the flow. And no one could have predicted what was going to happen and how mainstream and how popular it would become. Because at the time, it was so fringe. Like, it was so fringe. People thought I was so weird, and I had to beg my friends to come. They didn't understand why I was so into it. They were either going to the gym or going to aerobics and mm-hmm. thought yoga was like for little old ladies. but when they came, you see, and when they started to try to do the Ashtanga practice, which is so physically demanding, they loved it, because it was so physically demanding. So that's what turned people onto it more than anything else, really.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That totally makes sense. And yeah. So you were the first Ashtanga yoga teacher in Canada. Did that quickly change? Was there lots of other people who started teaching it more and more?
Yeah, well, what happened was my friend opened a yoga studio. And she was looking for teachers. She talked me into teaching. I had never taught before. So I literally started teaching to an empty room, then a couple of my friends, and then a couple more of my friends. And little by little, and then within a year, classes were pretty busy. And yeah, for sure. Then other people, well, you see, there was another Canadian who had been exposed to Ashtanga before me. His name is Danny Paradise. And Danny didn't live in Canada anymore. Danny's parents were in Canada and he grew up in Canada. But he had learned Ashtanga in Hawaii. And he would come back to visit his parents. And he heard about me teaching Ashtanga yoga and he didn't believe it. So he came to my class one night at this, it was called the yoga studio where I was working. He showed up at my class one night and the studio owner introduced me to Danny. And I was quite shocked because a couple of nights prior to Danny showing up at my class, I had just read another article in the Yoga Journal, and it was about Sting. Sting was actually on the front cover of the Yoga Journal. And in the article, Sting talks about his teacher, Danny Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
So here's this guy showing up at my class, who I just read about in this article. So he was actually the first teacher in Canada, but he didn't teach in Canada.
Gotcha.
He was teaching in Hawaii, and he was teaching all over the world. You know, maybe he showed a few of his friends in Toronto when he came to visit his parents, but he didn't teach a class, and nobody in Canada, no one in Toronto knew who he was. So that was pretty cool meeting Danny. And yeah, shortly after that, I started connecting with other people who had read the same article I had read and had also ordered Richard Freeman's video. One of those people was Ron Reed, who ended up being my business partner at Downward Dog. He had also ordered the video and was also practicing on his own at home with the video. He was also a longtime yoga practitioner and teacher. And he was, yeah, so he was teaching Hatha yoga in a church basement. He'd been doing that for many years. And he had discovered the video and then the Ashtanga practice. He started coming to my classes at the yoga studio. We became really good friends and colleagues, and him and I ended up opening Downward Dog together 2 years after I started teaching at my friend's studio.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so you open the studio, there's like no internet, yoga is just becoming more and more popular. What was it like as the internet became a thing? Like all of a sudden it's like, we need a website and we can advertise online.
It's hilarious because honestly, it's so hilarious. So I was in my late 30s at the time when I opened the studio. And I was accustomed to being self-employed because I was a self-employed body worker. When I started out as a body worker, I put posters up at the health food store. That's how I got my first few clients. And I just figured, okay, well, I'm opening a new business. I'm going to just do the same thing. I'm going to go around and put up posters, and I'm going to go around to other businesses in my building, and I'm going to hand them a brochure and give them a paper card, a free class pass. And I did that for months when we first opened. And then the word got out, and then we were getting busier and busier and busier. And without the internet and without any promoting, just word of mouth. And I remember the day that one of the students in the classes that had been coming regularly, he said to me, "Diane, I think you need a website." And I looked at him and I said, what is that? Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? And he said, "Well, it's this thing called the internet. And one of the ways that you can use it is to promote your business." I said, "Well, we don't really need that. We're doing fine." He said, "No, you do need it. You really do." And I said, "Well, I don't even know what that is." He said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." And he created a website. And I remember he asked me many times, he said, "So do you want to see the website that I made for you?" And I said, no, but thanks a lot. I really appreciate you doing it, but I don't have time right now. And I took zero interest because I had no idea what it was. And then I remember one day, I think he was getting a little frustrated with me. He shows up with a computer or something and he says, "Diane, you have to have a look at this. I need some feedback from you. Like, this is your business." And I looked at it and I said, "Wow, really, huh?" And he goes, "Yeah, what do you think?" And I said, "I think it's great." I again showed no interest in it. And he ended up managing that website and taking care of it for us for quite a few years. And I think I'd maybe looked at it once or twice. That's it. I had zero interest in the internet or websites or anything. All I was interested in was doing my practice and then teaching other people who were walking in the door. And how they heard about it was fascinating because it really was word of mouth. It really just spread from person to person. So So that's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I still think that even in this completely like digital world, I think that word of mouth is massive. Like it's when you hear about something, that's when you like seek it out, or you seek out that teacher, or you want to take a class with them. Like, I still think that word of mouth is so, so powerful.
I agree. And especially nowadays, with so many yoga studios everywhere, in every neighborhood, there are yoga studios. People don't have to travel anymore. So neighbors talking to neighbors are what's going to inform the people in the area about where the studios are, where the studios and teachers are that are going to resonate with them. So I agree. I think word of mouth and getting people in the door is the biggest hurdle. If you can get them in the door once and you're doing something that they resonate with, then that's a win-win. Mm-hmm. But and the other thing is, I think websites are so, I mean, we all take it for granted now, websites, and we don't do anything without checking out the website first, which is kind of a shame, because what I've learned is websites are very misleading. And I've known and seen people who have the best websites and the worst teachers. Mm-hmm. They spend all their money on their website and promoting and advertising and design, but they actually haven't studied as much as they could have. And right. They actually hire teachers with, you know, minimal experience, or, you know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. Websites are not always a good reflection of what is actually happening at the studio. Some of the best kept secrets don't even have very nice websites or websites at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really interesting because mm-hmm. it makes me think about kind of the whole like Instagram, yoga celebrity on Instagram type thing, where it's like, I think, you know, Instagram is curated content, which is essentially what a website is as well. And I think that lots of people do a good job at reflecting things accurately through their online, like through their digital brands. But then again, like, you can curate something really beautiful and maybe not have the skill set behind it. And I think it's so important. Like, even though, you know, I'm big on like learning the business of yoga, but I think at the end of the day, if you want to have a successful yoga business, you have to hone your skills as a yoga teacher. Like, you have to be good at what you do.
I think so. I mean, I think you can fool people on Instagram, you can fool people on Facebook, but you cannot fool people in person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that the teachers who are highly successful, they've got all the bases covered. They've got it all happening, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
yeah. And the people who put too much emphasis on social media, I don't understand how they could have enough time for themselves and their own practice and their own study.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm another generation. I am another generation, and I know things are changing rapidly. So I'm really not sure how younger people find the time to do everything they do. I mean, for me, my practice, my personal practice, took up 2 to 3 hours a day for, you know, probably like 20 years of my life. And that was the most important thing. And then everything else, you know, filled in around that time. So, yeah, nowadays I think, I don't know what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. What has it been like for you still teaching in, like, still teaching yoga, but seeing, you know, this big shift with like digital stuff, social media, and then just kind of like an influx of like a ton more teachers and studios and that sort of thing?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the whole landscape is changing drastically now, and it's changing on so many levels. I think that there's you know, on the one hand, things are just powering ahead, business as usual, power yoga classes, hot yoga classes, you know, the workout style yoga, the music, the vinyasa flow, all of that stuff, super popular, probably getting more and more popular. That's going strong. But there's another trend happening in the yoga world, and that is being fueled by people who have been injured doing yoga and people who are questioning a lot of the popular and common ideas around yoga. So I think that there is another stream beginning to develop now in the yoga world, and nobody's quite sure what they're going to call what they're doing. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like another stream of interest, and it's people who are exploring more functional movement, functional, you know, more sustainable yoga practices. And so for me, I've definitely shifted gears. In the past few years, I've lost interest in teaching popular yoga, and I'm much more interested now in my continued education and educating myself and cultivating a type of movement practice that will be sustainable into my senior years, so that I can help to guide other people who are also getting older as they develop and want to expand their understanding and their movement repertoire. So what was your question again? I feel like I'm rambling now.
No, you're good. And I was actually going to go, that was going to be my next question. So you kind of segued into it without me asking it. My question was like, what was it like as the industry sort of transitioned, like from, you know, everything being offline to everything online, and then everything like so many yoga teachers, so much social media, it just feels like it's like a totally different sort of industry.
I guess it is and it isn't, though, right? Because there's still people going to classes, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so it's like the industry has expanded so much. It's mind-boggling. Like, studios are still busy. There's still lots of full classes, and people are doing yoga online. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty awesome, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a whole new stream developing, which is what I had just talked about, the more functional, sustainable ideas around yoga and movement practices. So yoga's come out of its bubble. I guess that's what I would say is the biggest thing that's changed. You see, yoga teachers used to be in a bubble, and they believed everything they heard, and they did everything they were told. So whatever the guru said, the big ones being Iyengar and Joyce, whatever they preached, we pretty much followed, and we pretty much did everything they said. The reality is those practices were never designed or developed for middle-aged women, which is the majority of the people practicing yoga. That's not true. I'm going to take that back. Iyengar's practices actually did change. As he got older, what he taught changed. But Iyengar yoga is not popular.
Right.
It's not popular. It's still fringe, because it's too tedious and it's too detailed. It's not enough of a workout to be popular. So the workout yoga, which all came down through Patabi Joyce and the Ashtanga system, that's not sustainable. And that, unfortunately, is a bit of a harsh reality and a big wake-up call for a lot of people. So while we were living in this little bubble, we didn't know any better. What's happening now is people are finding out through the internet and through the expansion of connection and communication amongst various disciplines, meaning like outside the yoga world. And we're realizing that a lot of what is being taught and done in yoga is actually going to be causing a lot of injury for a lot of people. So we need to rethink how the power yoga, workout yoga practices are being taught to middle-aged women. And that's a huge revelation. And that's how I think the internet has changed everything, because we can't live in our little bubbles anymore. and just believe that this thing that the guru passed down to us is actually going to work for all of us at all times, because it's not. And this new development, this new stream of alternative teachers will begin to, you know, their word and their experience will begin to spread in the greater yoga community, just because people will get injured and then they'll go looking for some answers to their questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I'm curious, talking about functional movement, what was sort of your journey? Was there like one particular thing that kind of helped you like shift towards that? Or what was it that sort of shifted your own practice?
It was a rough journey, I'm going to say. It was really hard because I was in the bubble. And I believed everything about yoga was just perfect, just the way it was. And I preached it and I taught it and I lived it. And then I started getting injured. And I started to question why I was being injured. And it took quite a few injuries before the questioning became louder in my mind. And then about 7 years ago, I was exposed to some movement educators who belong to a community. They call themselves the AXIS, that's A-X-I-S, AXIS Syllabus Movement Research Community. And they are very, very, I'm going to say kind of, I don't know how to say it. They're all very accomplished and advanced movers. Many of them have background in dance. Not all of them, but many of them. Mm-hmm. But they teach movement principles that are adaptable to everyday movements, such as walking and rolling over, getting up and down from the ground, stepping, jumping. And the principles of movement they teach are just so darn practical. And it makes so much sense in terms of applying the information to everyday life that I was quite astounded by how little I knew about biomechanics and movement. And I realized that as I knew a lot about yoga postures, and a little bit about yoga philosophy, but I didn't know anything at all about movement. And that kind of freaked me out when I realized that, because I had been studying or practicing, well, body work for one thing, but that doesn't teach you anything about movement, just teaches you about bodies that aren't moving, mm-hmm. right? Bodies on your mat. Mm-hmm. And yoga teaches you a lot about your mind, and a lot about controlling your mind. That was one of the main reasons why yoga poses were ever developed, was to help people control their minds so that they could sit in meditative states. And so I guess what I want to say is the yoga postures themselves were never designed to make people better movers.
Right.
They were designed to make people able to control their minds, which is important. I'm sure glad I had that experience, because now I feel that I've cultivated and developed certain qualities that I wouldn't have had I not subjected myself to those practices that require a tremendous amount of focus and concentration. But the focus and concentration that we put into our yoga practice to keep our bodies in these postures does not translate into, for instance, walking well. And I guess as I'm getting older, I'm going to be 60 soon, the simple things in life become really, really important. And being able to go for a long walk and feel really healthy walking seems like a really important priority for me. more important to me than standing on my head or doing extreme backbends. So my priorities have shifted as I've gotten older, and I've become much more curious about moving well and preserving the integrity of my joints so that I might prevent premature wear and tear of my joints, which I think is, you know, happening to some degree for people who only practice yoga poses, especially people practicing yoga poses deeply and going into extreme ranges of motion. It's actually not good for your joints to do that, especially as you get older, or especially if you're hypermobile to start with. So, yeah, I'm really interested in learning about how to stay healthy for, you know, in my joints and my body as I get older. And I don't think yoga is necessarily going to provide me with the tools that I need to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really interesting to be talking about this, because I feel like, you know, that's also important to me, and I'll turn 30 early next year. So it's like, even looking at like where I'm at in my life, I think that it's like important to me that I'm able to like do kick-ass things when I'm like 80 years old. Like, I want to be able to walk and move and be able to use stairs and stuff like that. Like, it just fuels me to take care of my body when I see like somebody needing a wheelchair in an airport or not being able to use the stairs or something like that. Like, I think it's really sad that so many of us don't have that mobility. Like, we lose control of our physical bodies as we age. So it's incredible that you're offering this and that there's so many more people who are picking up on this, because I think it's very, very important.
Yeah, I think it's important. And I think that all of this knowledge that's available outside of the yoga world can all be brought into the yoga world. And there's a lot of really interesting research that's going to be surfacing in the near future about yoga, the way it was practiced before Krishnamacharya, before we got into a very linear yoga practice. There's research showing that there were way more women practicing yoga, and that the yoga practices were much more fluid and contain much more like spiraling and fluid movements. And I think that just changing how we think yoga poses need to look will help us to honor the actual shapes of our joints and our bones and how we're actually designed to move in our bodies. And I think, unfortunately, what happened in the yoga world is we all started imitating these pictures that we saw primarily in the main book is Light on Yoga. And, you know, pictures are interesting to look at, but they certainly don't tell the whole picture. And there's a way to, I think, create yoga poses that are a lot kinder to the body, and it involves just being less rigid and less linear and allowing for more curves and circular movements. Because you got to remember, most of our joints are balls and sockets. Mm-hmm. And when they move actually along curved pathways, not linear straight line pathways, which has become like the norm in yoga. And everybody thinks that we have to move that way to call it yoga, but I reject that idea. And I don't believe we need to move like robots to call what we're doing yoga. Mm-hmm. That we can actually move like more and create more movements that are more dance-like movements, more fluid and more flowing. And that will allow us to keep practicing much longer with less wear and tear in our joints.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was it like for you to shift your offerings? Because I know it's always interesting when you kind of dive into something that's different from what you've been offering before, like going from...
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is great. This is a great question, because I know we're talking about building successful yoga businesses here on this website, and I certainly had a very successful yoga business, probably one of the most successful ones back in the day in Canada. And then I went from being super popular and very successful to being less popular and less popular because I started changing my ways. People didn't like that. To becoming very stressed out about losing members and losing students. I then, 5-6 years ago, I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. And during my my treatments, right at the very beginning of my treatments, right after I was diagnosed, basically, I asked myself what was important to me and what I needed to do and say in my life that would help me to heal. And that's when I realized that I didn't want to be pressured to teach a style of yoga that was popular but not good for me anymore. And I left my business. I left Downward Dog, and I was very, very fortunate because my partner, Ron Reed, was able to buy my shares. So I was able to sell out, walk away, heal from my cancer, and start a new life, basically, is what I've been doing for the past 5 years. And it's been an interesting journey. And I've got to say, it's been hard. And if I was younger and had young kids at home and had a mortgage to pay, it would not have been a very good financial move, that's for sure. But it certainly saved my soul and reignited my faith again in believing in that we should live our lives believing in what we believe in and just keep trusting that and hoping that somehow things are all going to work out again. And I'm at this point in my life now where I'm actually feeling incredibly optimistic that somehow it's all going to work out again, that I've created a new identity for myself, I guess. It's like I don't teach yoga anymore, and I don't know what I teach anymore, but I'm organizing events now that are called MRI, which stands for Movement Research Intensives. I just finished hosting the second one. It was a 2-week event held in Toronto at a place called, I rented the Dover Courthouse, which is a very large, open studio. And I had 35 people who signed up for this event for 2-week training in alternative movement. That was exciting.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's really cool that there's so much interest right now. And the majority of the people who came to the event were yoga teachers who had been teaching. Many of them have studios, all kind of like hitting the plateau and then the reality check that, oh my God, I can't keep doing this to my body. What am I going to do now? So it was, yeah, the majority of the people came because of that reason. And they loved it. They loved it. They're ecstatic. Like everybody left completely on the moon. And I'm excited to be able to share with other yoga teachers, the teachers who have helped me learn so much about biomechanics and healthy movement. And so this event that I host, I teach a taught maybe like 10 hours out of 100 hours. And I had 9 different presenters. Many of them are my own teachers, and some are my friends who I've learned from. So it's very cool to bring together like a host of teachers who I have so much respect for. And we're really moving beyond the yoga paradigm. And yet, to me, it's all yoga. So it's a bit of a dilemma that many of us are facing right now, because it all feels very yoga-like when we're moving across the floor, and yet it's not linear and it's not static. So it's a new era we're entering. And it's nice for me to be sort of helping people transition into the next possible chapter. Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder how long the yoga trend will keep booming for, right? Everything changes.
Yeah.
And I wonder when the tide is going to start to shift. And then I wonder what's coming next, you know, like what will happen next? What will be, and maybe it'll be a lot of different things instead of one thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, because that's really what we're discovering, is that the reason people get hurt doing anything is usually because they've done too much of the thing that hurt them.
Yeah.
So repetitive strain injury is the number one cause of injury. So it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you do too much of that, you're most likely to get hurt. Whereas if you go to yoga one day, the gym another day, Pilates another day, dance class another day, swimming, a walk, and a bike ride, you're way less likely to get hurt mm-hmm. in your body because you're doing so many different things with it. The body loves diversity. So I'm hoping, and what I'm preaching nowadays is like do as many different things as possible. And what I encourage people who have yoga studios to do is to offer as much diversity as possible in their schedule, in their studio, so that people don't have to go elsewhere, that they can create community coming back to the same studio every day and doing so many different things right there in that studio with their community. It doesn't have to be that people should, you know, have to go to all these different places. I hope that in the future, and I'm starting to see it in Toronto. I know a few studio owners who are integrating way more diversity in their schedules than what was happening even 5 years ago. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah. It's so cool. It's just making me think about how your career has really gone like full circle. Like you were kind of on like the front edge of, you know, opening a studio, being one of the first Ashtanga teachers in Canada. And now there's sort of, I think, this shift that's happening around towards like functional movement and just looking more at like what the body is capable of, what we can be doing and how we can like keep our mobility for our whole lives. And it's like, you're really at the forefront of that as well, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by all things related to the body. And yeah, and I guess I was forced to look beyond because of my own injury. So yeah, and I also feel very fortunate that I was guided sort of in a strange way to find these people who were able to help me understand so many things that I had no idea about. So it's pretty cool stuff that's happening out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Facebook group, you know, I should mention the Facebook group because that's been a huge, huge eye-opener for me. Do you know about the Facebook group?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm in your Facebook group.
Yeah, it's called the Yoga and Movement Research Community. There are, I think, getting close to 27,000 members.
Wow.
In just over 2 years ago, I started it. I started it on a whim, because I wanted to just talk about this stuff, about how yoga is, you know, changing, about getting hurt doing yoga, about what we need to do, like, what are we going to do, people? And I was shocked at how many people were feeling the same way I was feeling, and I had no idea, no idea. So our group is very, very, very active. There are thousands of active members every single day in the group. And it's pretty cool because we're exchanging information across disciplines. And so yoga teachers get to communicate with like personal trainers and physiotherapists and back and forth. And, you know, someone will ask a question about whatever, say, tennis elbow. And then you'll get the yoga teachers responding, you get the personal trainers, you get the OTs and the physios, and everybody's interesting input gives people so much to think about and consider. Mm-hmm. So if you, you know, you live in your little bubble, you think you know a few things, and you're exposed to something like this, you realize, oh my God, there is so much to learn in this world. And how do you pick and choose what you're going to focus on and what you're going to study?
Yeah.
It's really hard to narrow it down, I find.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I've always really loved about yoga is the fact that there is, like, I feel like I'll never know it all because it's always going to be like expanding with research and bodies and stuff like that, which is really cool. But it's also like, I think it can be overwhelming sometimes when you're like, I don't really know much about this thing that I teach.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And that's what keeps it exciting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm curious if there's other people listening that are interested more in sort of the functional movement, are there any resources or people's work that you would, you know, other than your own, that you would really recommend for people to check out as kind of like a jumping point to learn more about that?
Yeah, well, that's a really great question. And that leads me into segueing into talking about my plans for the future, because what I'm planning right now is a new, I don't know what to call it. We haven't quite figured out exactly what it is, but it's going to be a platform where these yoga teachers who are stepping outside of the yoga world and bringing back information that can be taught in yoga classes and in yoga studios. I'm creating a platform for these teachers to have a place where they can sell online content, because there are really very few of them, and they're scattered all over the world. They're all in the group. They're all in the yoga and movement research community group. There are a few people who are, you know, really beginning to create the content that's going to help to educate yoga teachers making the transition into more sustainable practices. Of course, the first person that comes to mind, of course, is my own daughter. I don't know if you know her.
I actually interviewed her like a month or two ago.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Right. So, she's amazing. She's my girl, and she's been doing yoga with me since she was like 4 or 5 years old, coming to my classes. I mean, coloring and playing with her dolls, you know, on my mat as I taught classes. So that's what I meant. She didn't actually do the yoga, but she's been exposed and around it. But she started doing it in her, you know, in her teens and loved it. And look at her now. But so she's definitely on the cutting edge. People like Jules Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
right? She's an amazing yoga teacher who went to do, I don't know what she did, her PhD in something. And they're like, she's writing books and she's going to be teaching a lot more. And I heard that her and Catherine are actually going to be doing an online course. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. There's another woman named Trina Altman, who I think is based in California. I know that she's also creating online content. Jenny Rollins is another woman who's creating online content. Who else? I'm kind of like blanking out right now, but there's a little Garrett O'Neill is another person. There's a little group of people that I'm aware of. And I would imagine that this little group of people, these people are going to become the next generation, like leaders in this new stream of yoga education that's beginning to take shape now. So that's pretty exciting stuff. And and the other thing, of course, is the AXA syllabus. You know, if you happen to live somewhere where there's an AXA syllabus teacher, I would highly recommend you seek out some personal instruction, and they can help you with simple things like, you know, walking and rolling across the floor and movement that moves through space, as opposed to movement that's done on a mat.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got an online course on my website called Developmental Movement. It's a 12-week course. So it's like live footage that I filmed. And it takes people through developmental movement, which is basically, you know, from happy baby sidelying, rolling over to kneel, rolling over to sit, rolling over to crouch, crouching, crawling, squatting, and walking. So the basic fundamental movement patterns that we learn when we're growing up. I've done a lot of research and I practice that way now. And I think it's just a really, really smart way to practice movement, to really, you know, go back to the beginning again. I'm really interested in going back to fundamental movement patterns and kind of like start all over again.
Yeah. Funny. Yeah. I think it's really, really incredible with that sort of stuff, because like I've done like a couple movement things and I practice at the yoga lounge and work at the yoga lounge where like Jeff Ma is doing a lot of that stuff as well. And he did his teacher training at Downward Dog ages ago, way back when. Cool. And there's like, hey, there's like a wall where we can hang now. And it's just like so humbling as like a yogi and a yoga teacher when you go and he says, we're going to hang for a minute. And I'm like, I got this. And like 10 seconds later, I'm like, I don't got this. Like what? Like when did I lose this ability to hang? Like when in my life did I lose this? Because this was easy as a kid. And somewhere along the way, it's just not something that I did anymore. It's incredible.
And just that simple thing of incorporating hanging back into your movement diet, well, that alone can prevent so many injuries that we're seeing in yoga because of the imbalance. When too much pushing, not enough pulling. So that's what I mean. It's just like little things like that can make a huge difference. And teachers like Jeff, so smart for just being so aware and so willing to get the bar in the studio. And I don't know what kind of classes, you know, he's teaching now, but I'm glad to hear that, and I've been hearing this from other people, that there's more functional movement included, which I think is really intelligent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree. That's amazing to hear. And I'll definitely link to all those resources that you talked about. And a number of those people that you mentioned have been on the podcast before. So I'll link through to their episodes and their websites and that sort of thing so people can go check them out. The last question I wanted to ask you, I know we're going to wrap up pretty quick here, is, if somebody out there is listening and they're a newer yoga teacher, what's like one sort of recommendation you would give to them in terms of like diving into their career and diving into their business?
I'm just going to say the most obvious thing, and that is to take care of yourself first, and that you can't help all your students and you can't build a career unless you're feeling really good in your own body. So to figure out what that is for you and to make that the priority for you and never make that second or third in your list of what you plan out for every single day of your life, but always leave time for yourself to do your own practice and to take care of yourself. And because without that, nothing else is going to flow. So that's my advice. It's not very business-like. That's a little bit more like common sense.
Yeah, sometimes we need common sense advice. Amazing. Thank you so much for this conversation. It's been so incredible. And I just, I've just really, really enjoyed this. So thank you for taking the time to talk with me and share all of this. And if people want to learn more about you, where can they go to find you?
Well, I have a website, dianebruni.com.
Amazing. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And your Facebook group.
The Facebook group would be great too.
Okay. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much, Diane.
All right. Take care.
All right, guys, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Diane Bruni. I just feel like she's doing so much cool stuff for the yoga world, so inspirational, and definitely makes me want to look a little bit deeper at what I'm doing in my own practice and my own teaching. Of course, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can reach out to Diane or myself at info@mbomyoga.com. You can find show notes, the links, everything we talked about, all up-to-date blog posts, et cetera, at mbomyoga.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And you can also find the private Facebook community at Yoga Business Badasses. So just search that in Facebook, answer the questions, and I'll let you in. The last thing that I wanted to say before we leave is that I do have a $24 offering with Yoga Business Bootcamp. It's called the Yoga Teacher Toolbox. It is the most affordable offering that there is, and it gives you all the resources without, you know, all the fluffy stuff. So if you are interested in Yoga Business Bootcamp, but you want the more affordable version, head on over to mbomyoga.com/yogabusinessbootcamp. And it can take you to the Teachable course, which is yogabusinessbootcamp.teachable.com. And then you can find the $24 course. Of course, if you have any questions, definitely just reach out and let me know. Otherwise, I'll see you next week. Bye.